Hello, sports fans. It's Sunday, February 9th. Welcome to Cleats by Dre. I'm Dre. Let's talk some sports. Cleaters, my Cleater by Dre's. Here I am. It's me, still alive. I'm sorry it's been so long. What has it been? A little over 3 weeks. I can explain. Yeah, last you heard from me, what was I doing? I was previewing the Notre Dame Ohio State college football championship game. And then I've been nowhere or everywhere or I don't know. So the way the last few weeks have gone, I decided for the title game to fly out to see Mike. You know Mike, right? Midwest Mike did a great job on the podcast throughout the year. I brought Braden, brought my oldest son. We went out to suburbs of Chicago. Mike's got three awesome kids, two boys around Braden's age, MLK weekend. You know, we decided let's make the most of it. So we flew out, had an awesome time with them. I brought my podcast microphone. I was looking forward to doing a rapid reaction after the big game. Then the game happened, and, you know, we don't have to recap it at this point. It was a roller coaster, right? Notre Dame made it close in the end. They didn't pull it out. When the game ended, we didn't really feel like podcasting. I mean, really, our job was to manage emotions, right? A lot of kids watching, first time watching a big game. Unfortunately, it's not our first time watching Notre Dame lose a big game. So we had some crying. It was late. School the next day. I said, let's not do the reflection podcast that night. Braden and I flew back on that Tuesday, back to New York. I was going to do a podcast that night. I was kind of tired still. And I was like, oh, I could do it tomorrow. So I did not come through. Then Wednesday comes, I get the flu. The FLU flu, influenza A, whatever it may be. It's been going around, and it knocked me out. It knocked me out all weekend. We missed the Pinewood Derby. Quite honestly, it took 2 weeks to get the remnants out of it. So that's where I've been. Haven't had the voice or the energy to pod. In the midst of this, I started a new job. Yeah, it's big news. Big news in the Cleats family here. And I'm 2 weeks into it. I love it. Really enjoying it. So I'm already shifting to like this is a weekend thing now, right? Job comes first. I want to keep doing this. So we're already on a weekend schedule now, which I'd love. I'd love to keep doing this once a week on weekends. So we missed our opportunities because of the flu. But I'm back, and I'm ready to go. It's been so long. I'm just going to unload, I'll call it a take quake on you all. We're going to touch on all or near all the teams I follow. And I'm going to try to introduce a thought, a take that maybe you haven't heard yet. Something new. So buckle up. We're going to do Notre Dame football. We're going to do the Giants. We're going to do Duke Hoops. Going to do the Knicks. You know, a bonus New York Hoops team will end with the Mets. So let's groove to it. This is not going to be one of my deep analysis episodes where I go deep on one topic. This is going to be quick hitters on a bunch of different things that's been in my mind over the last 3 weeks. I'm going to unload it on you. Let's groove. Let's go. Take number one. Notre Dame football wins the championship in the four-team playoff setup. I'll get into that. I mean, it's one of those what-ifs. I had a whole recap plan for the game. I mentioned that I couldn't make it to the mic. You know, it was unfortunate, right? Because Notre Dame, in that championship game, they didn't play their A game, right? And you probably needed your A game to beat Ohio State. But a lot of good came out of it, right? They showed they were competitive. They showed they could play. The Great House breakout that I called in the preview episode, let's build that into the following year. When have we had a – it's been a while since we've had a receiver like that, you know, making plays. Brings me back to Will Fuller days. But besides the point, it didn't come through this year, but I got to say, is this another what if, right? The original what – not the original, but a recent what if was – we all talk about it in 2012, 2013 – if Kansas State doesn't lose, was it to Baylor or to TCU? I'm mixing this up. But anyway, if Kansas State doesn't lose, we're playing Kansas State in the title game, and we're probably beating them. You know, Alabama was the best team that year, but that's a what if. And my what if here is, in a 4-team playoff, before this 8-team playoff, Notre Dame probably wins it. And the biggest reason is Ohio State's not in it, right? No way Ohio State gets in with two losses. You know, and they are by far and away the best team this year. And, you know, the way it would have broken out in the old 14 playoff, forget about the automatic qualifiers, right? So there's no Boise State who had the 3 seed. There's no Arizona State who had the 4 seed. You would have had Oregon 1, Georgia 2. Texas probably would have been 3 with one loss. And then it comes down to the committee having to decide between a Penn State team and Notre Dame, right? A Penn State team, God, they really didn't beat anybody this year, who had, you know, really good losses to Ohio State and then to Oregon in the championship game. And then Notre Dame, who's been playing great ball and one loss. So the way the actual rankings went, right, they ranked Penn State ahead of Notre Dame, right? Penn State was a 6 seed, Notre Dame was a 7 seed. But also they didn't have to think too hard about it. They didn't have to do anything controversial. I think if it's a 4-team playoff, I think there's some controversial. So they, you know, they avoid the rematches just of Oregon and Penn State. I think Notre Dame slips in as the 4. I have every reason to believe that Notre Dame was the best, hottest team of those 4. Texas probably would have given them a battle, but they already beat Georgia, and Lord knows what that Oregon team was doing. So there you go. There's another what-if for you to ponder. 1 year earlier in this matchup, Notre Dame has a title. But anyway, let's look ahead. I'm not going to recap all the offseason moves, but look, college football is – change is inevitable, and especially with success. Guys get noticed, guys get plucked. But, man, you got to believe in Freeman. You got to believe in Bavakwa, that he's going to give Freeman the resources. It's up and up. This program's here to stay. Let's go to the Giants for the next one. Take number 2. I'm okay with Eli Manning not being a first ballot Hall of Famer. I'm not going to do too much of rehashing and analyzing of the Giants and their draft plans, the offseason plans. We'll get to that. But this podcast started when Francisco Lindor didn't make an All-Star team. So I'm big into these honorary, you know, decisions and elections. You know, I'm okay with not being a first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, for one, let's analyze this, right? Who the most recent first ballot quarterback Hall of Famers? His brother Peyton, Brett Favre, Warren Moon, Troy Aikman, Steve Young, Dan Marino, John Elway, Jim Kelly, Joe Montana, Dan Fouts, Terry Bradshaw. That's going back like 30 years. I don't see Eli in that group. Love Eli. Oh my God, I love Eli. You know, maybe Warren Moon and Dan Fouts. I know what people say. You know, what did they win, right? And but the rest of those guys are guys that I haven't put Eli's name with. The other non first year quarterback to get in was Kurt Warner. Got it in his 3rd year. I'll be honest. I don't think Eli's full career is. Holds a snuff to Kurt Warner. Kurt Warner has a Super Bowl with the Rams, really came close to having a second one, and he has MVPs. And he had a stretch where, actually, Kurt Warner played in another third one against the Cardinals. He had stretches where he was the best quarterback in the league for several years at a time. So Eli, well-documented, incredible playoff runs, legendary playoff runs. As Mike Greenberg says, right, you can't tell the history of the NFL without Eli Manning. But Giants fans, let's not pretend that outside of those two runs, God, we sometimes hated Eli. Couldn't stand him. And I'm not even saying towards the tail end of his career, right? Before his first Super Bowl, we wanted him out. Maybe that's a strong word, right? We were frustrated with him. You know, he had bad luck, right? He had bad luck, the plexical barris injury. I really think the Giants were on the path to a Super Bowl in that year. The Giants really didn't do much to give him help after the second Super Bowl. But I'm telling you, I watched a lot of Giants football over those 15 years. And again, outside of those eight games, those 2 years, which were incredible, I don't come away saying, like, hey, Eli's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I never thought that. I think he'll get in. You know, there's a lot of other good quarterbacks coming in. But, you know, we got to chill. We got to chill with the New York bias, chill with the, hey, everyone's a first ballot Hall of Famer. You know, I'm okay with it. And you know what? Eli is too. So he'll get in. He'll get in. Oh, wait. Before the next take, let's close out football. Let's close it out. The Super Bowl's today. Chiefs or Eagles, probably the two teams I'd least like to root for. But what we haven't done, I got to recap my fantasy football prognostications. You might remember, right, September or August, I gave 7 guys to outperform their ADP, and here's how I did. My wins, James Cook, right, drafted as running back 14, finished as running back 8. Small wins, right? I said Najee Harris as a running back, won as running back 23, finished as running back 20, small win. Xavier Worthy, small win. Won as Chiefs wide receiver 37, finished as wide receiver 32. The rest were L's. I mean, I recommended Dak and Trevor Lawrence. Both incomplete because they got injured, but when they were playing, they were bad. So I'm going to give myself L's for that. Tank Dell got injured, but he wasn't great when he was in anyway, so he's an L. So we're 3-3. My last tip is Blake Corum, which is tricky. Obviously an L, because he didn't really do much. Running back 41. It was kind of dependent on Kyren getting injured. He did not get injured. So it's a weird L. It's a weird 3-4 record. I didn't have a great fantasy football year. Near last place. Didn't make the playoffs in any of my leagues. It just goes to show, I love fantasy baseball. And I can't wait for the start of fantasy baseball. More consistent. More predictable. Football is maybe more fun, but I'm not going to be in the prognostication business. You might not get predictions from me next year. So that's that. That's fantasy. And there's one more thing I want to do. One more thing about football and the Super Bowl. I'm all about the moments when we can get our kids to want to watch sports, right? Because I assume if you're listening to this, you like watching sports. And that's not something that's just as easily brought on to this generation of kids. When we were growing up, geez, I remember I had channel 2, 4, and 7. Maybe channel 3, that was like a local, like, you know, the Mets network or whatever. The kids got a lot more options. You know, so we had to really try to get them to watching it. And I think I broke through with my oldest this past year. I've talked about that. But here's a Super Bowl. Here's some Super Bowl watching tips for the kids, especially people with young kids, you know, 7 or below. The challenge this year, because what worked for us really well last year, the Nickelodeon version of the Super Bowl was awesome last year, but unfortunately they don't have that this year. I don't know. The NFL doesn't care enough, or Fox doesn't have a version of, you know, CBS had Disney, I guess, but that's disappointing. So that's going to be tough because the kids are really into that. But you know, live it up with the commercials. You know, throw in the puppy bowl. That's still around. I don't know. Like, you know, be flexible with the TV alternatives. But the biggest thing we did last year, I'll see if I do this again. They did a box. You know, we all know about the boxes, right? We know, you know, 100, you know, 10 by 10. Everyone buys, you know, a box. It's a little too complicated, right? So what we did, and you know, involve the kids in drawing it out, right? Because it's like a little art experiment. You don't have to do 100 boxes. If you got a family of 4 or 5, you know, call up one of your siblings or an uncle or grandparents, get them involved, and you can break down the 100 boxes into like eight different regions or 15 different regions. So you don't feel like you have to do individual boxes, but then everyone gets a region, right? And you get all the numbers in that region. And for the kids, it's all about toys, right? You don't have to do money. Say, hey, whoever wins the fourth quarter gets the really big toy. Whoever wins halftime gets a medium toy. Whoever wins the first or third quarter gets little toys. And they get into it. They like seeing the numbers. You pull the numbers. Oh, this is my number. This is my number. Yeah, I recommend this. Pull a little gambling, a little kid-friendly gambling. Put the you got to do it on the big poster board, right? Huge. And put it up, hang it up near the TV. They'll be checking back and forth. Give it a shot, you know? The kids will get into it if you get into it. So, a little Super Bowl watching tip for the kids. I got one for March Madness, too, when we get up to that. Enjoy the game. Have some good snacks. Let's hope it's a good one. I really, Chiefs or Eagles, I could care less. Let's have a close one. Bye-bye, football. Duke basketball. This Duke basketball team is the most dominant Duke team since 2001, and maybe earlier. Now, I realize the timing of this is not great. This, you know, last night, Saturday night, we actually just saw their first ACC loss down to Clemson, where, geez, it was a tough battle. Clemson was tougher, better on the boards for sure. We were missing Gillis, I think, who was key. Flag looked under the weather, but man, he's a baller. Trying to fight through it, you know, unlucky again towards the end with the slipping. You're going to lose some games. But this is the most dominant Duke team since at least 2001. And I shared this sentiment. I'll give myself credit. I shared this sentiment like a month ago, my Duke basketball thread. And I got some fiery responses. It's too early. You know, we have championship teams since then. You know, they know how to win. What are you talking about? This team, no. They don't know how to win. We'll see. Maybe I'll let that debate happen on here as we really get into Duke basketball soon. But look, I have analytics on my side. You know, it's the Ken Pomeroy era since 2002. You know, and look, you can love analytics, hate analytics. He measures efficiency, right? He just measures how many points you score per possession, and how many points you give up per possession. He adjusted for schedule. And you can look across years. And this Duke team, the rating of plus 35.51, which means nothing to nobody, it's their highest, I think, since 1999, and that team that lost to UConn in the finals. So I have analytics on my side. You know, they're balanced, too. They have right now the fourth-best defense, fifth-best offensive rating, the only team in the country to be top five in both. But you can see this on the court, you know. This team, you know, outside of tonight, at least the last 2 months, they're beating teams handedly. All kinds of teams. And if you look at the makeup, like, you know, they have size and depth. Depth is key because you could play a lot of different styles. And you can match up a lot of different styles. They got young guys, they got old guys. They're starting to learn how to play together. Shire's starting to call plays. He's really crafted an incredible team. And the head of the snake is as good of a head of snake as I've seen Yeah, I've seen since 2001 in J. Will. Cooper Flagg, he just has a sixth sense about the game. And he has guts, and he's still getting better. He's going to be an incredible pro. You know, part our text message thread also, the side conversation is Cooper versus Zion, which I don't care about that as much because Zion was incredible. I'm not going to lie. I mean, he was incredible to watch. His instincts were incredible. It's a shame what's happening in his NBA career right now. He was a marvel to watch. Cooper's a different, much different player than Zion. You know, a little more heady, a little more instincts. I think a better passer. I think a better defender, a sound defender, team defender. Zion was an incredible shot blocker and good. He had good instincts too. But I'm not here to debate that. I'm just saying this is the most dominant team. I loved the 2010 Duke team that Shire was on, and that might be the other best Duke team since 2001. They were killers on the offensive boards, and they had a really good defense, and they hit their strides towards the end of the year. Obviously, 2015 was real strong with the freshman class. Who else am I missing? I don't know. I'm looking at these other teams. They're not quite as strong. I mean, it was 2004. God, we had the best team in the country in 2004 for KenPom. 2002, obviously they lost to Indiana in the Sweet 16. So, look, the book is still out on this team. What's strange, and you're going to call me middleman Dre. I predicted Duke to go to the Final Four before the year, but not one at all because I think they were still figuring out how to play with each other. They're young. I don't know. I can't guarantee they're going to win the title, right? March Madness is crazy. March Madness is a crapshoot. I think they have as good a chance as any of the teams currently to win it. But I'm talking about dominance. They are just that much better than every other team. Yeah, the ACC's down. But face it, title or not, and this is a weird debate, you could still be the most dominant Duke team. So, I hope they hit a stride. I hope they find another gear. I hope they keep having an answer for everything. I hope they stay healthy. Get Gillis back. It's been a fun run, and more to come. Let's sneak in another New York City basketball team. St. John's Red Storm. Yeah. God, it's incredibly exciting to have St. John's back, and it's exciting. But my next take, it's St. John's potentially only a first weekend team in the NCAA tournament. We can't get carried away. And that's mean. Because look, my history, I grew up a St. John's fan. I was a diehard St. John's fan in the 90s. I had Felipe Lopez jerseys. I was into Zendon Hamilton. Obviously, Ron Artest, when he was called Ron Artest. Eric Barkley, Booty Thornton. St. John's had some battles with Duke in the late 90s, including going down to Cameron, I think, in 2000 and winning. I was rooting for St. John's in those games. Right? I started at Duke in 2002. That was really when I... Yeah, always a fan of Duke before then, but really when I fell for them. So, and God, St. John's has they've been in the gutter. It mirrors the Knicks team, right? Mirrors it in terms of since 2000. They've really been in the gutter. And they can't find their way out. They've been irrelevant. And great for like Rick Pitino, finally the great hire. Finally, he wanted to come here. They got jobbed last year. They should have made the NCAA tournament, right? They played UConn as best as anyone else did. And they got a great squad this year, you know. And I'm not going to act like I've been watching them all year. I really tuned in for this week. You know, the Marquette and the UConn, tough, gritty wins. Great to hear the Garden rocking and on, you know, earlier in the week. Great to see, God, I love seeing UConn lose. And that's totally the Duke fan of me, right? UConn, kudos to them. Incredible run of success. Man, Liam McNeely, it just kind of annoys me. But now I know how it feels with Duke fans getting annoyed at our player. No, but he's different. Like, the guy's like, maybe Dan Hurley wants to find one of these guys a year, because I loved Cam Spencer last year. That guy was a baller. That guy knew where to be, knew to get a rebound. Just one of those winners. Liam McNeely is like a cross between Cam Spencer and Jake Voskal. Like that, Travis Knight. UConn always had those guys. That's a tangent, but you know what a great win. St. John's at UConn. That's got to be their best win, probably since going to Cameron. You know, the team plays a great defense. Team defense. They're diving for loose balls, turning into points. But this offense is limited. You know, and I'm gonna rely on KenPom also, right? The ratings. St. John's, they're 16th right now, even after the last few wins. Second best defense in the country, only behind Tennessee, but 82nd best offense. They shot 4-for-21 against UConn from three. Defense is consistent, but man, it's really hard to string together a bunch of wins when your offense is not good enough. So, what's adding to this is the Big East is a little down. We all know the ACC is way down, but the Big East is a little down this year, right? UConn's been struggling. It's really like Marquette and Creighton, but you know, Georgetown's not quite back yet. Xavier's having a down year. Villanova's not quite back yet. Butler's kind of down. Providence is down. Who else in the Big East? Is that it? I mean, DePaul. We don't have to mention DePaul. Seton Hall is way down. I mean, it's a state of college sports right now. I mean, Rick Pitino outright said Kadari Richmond would be playing for Seton Hall this year if it wasn't for money in NIL. St. John's just has more hungry donors, hungry alumni. The Big East is down, so the St. John's a little bit of a paper tiger. I mean, it's an incredible story. I love seeing it. I don't want to knock it. But I'm going to say it how it is. I mean, the SEC is strong. The Big 12 is strong. The Big 10 has a bunch of teams around that mark. The Big East and the ACC are weak. So St. John's could be a Sweet 16 team. Depends on how the field breaks. But, you know, they're looking like a first weekend team. I got to agree. Mike texted me that last night. But still, enjoy it. It's an incredible fun to see. Let's head to the real New York basketball team that we care about, right? New York Knicks. Now, the Knicks, they've been better than my prediction so far. But man, Thibs is on the hot seat and about to go in the hot seat. That's my take. So what I'll say is, right, and we haven't talked a lot of Knicks. I've been so into Notre Dame football. My season preview, right, I said the Knicks would be at 500 by the end of December. And man, they proved me wrong. Now, I never looked at the schedule, and the schedule is really weak. But now we're February 9th. They're well over 500. After the loss to the Celtics last night, they are 34-18, I think. I mean, comfortably in the three seed. And let's be honest, comfortably going to make the playoffs this year and probably comfortably with home field advantage. So, like, it's a big kudos, right? Because they had a lot of moving parts. They've integrated, you know, all-star starter nods from Brunson and Towns. You know, that's an incredible acknowledgement. Yeah, Towns has been banged up a little bit. But he was so impressive towards the start of the year. You got to think he'll come back to it. The team's been fun to watch, and they've been good, and they just had some great wins against some Western Conference teams. You know, but and maybe this is recency bias. I just saw them get waxed by the Celtics again. I think I'm struggling with this one because I think I don't know. Maybe I got to see the next two games against the Celtics. But the thing is, everything needs to be on high alarm right now. This window is here. This window is not going to last forever. The Brunson, the Towns, the Bridges, the Ananobi, the Hart, they will get older. There will be years when one of them is majorly injured. Everything is on the line this year, right? Because you never know. And man, I'm worried about Thibs, whatever you want to call him. I don't know if he has an answer for Boston, who you better believe you're going to see in the Eastern playoffs somewhere. Could be the semifinals, could be the finals. I just don't. The team didn't look competitive tonight. What has he really ever proven? What is he? As far as he went with the Chicago teams, was to the conference finals. Didn't do much with Minnesota. We've now had a first round series loss with home field advantage to the Hawks, and 2 second round losses to lower seeded teams. Again, we had home court advantage. I'm just saying, Thibs has to get us to the conference finals this year, or I really think we got to think about who else, because we are in a window. A lot of coaches out there, they would leave their current post to come here. I don't know how much loyalty Leon Rose has or affection. He seems like a guy that's a cold blooded winner. But I'm not going to be the guy that's just happy to be here, right? That is just happy to be here with 50 wins a year and second round in the playoffs. It's a title. It's a title or bust. So good job on the Knicks so far this season, but everything's on the line. So Thibs hot seat, calling it. You guys still with me? Last take is the biggest one. The New York Mets. Great offseason, but the Mets should not be done. The New York Mets should trade for Mike Trout. Yes. Now look, I was excited when they finally signed Alonso. 2 years, $54 million. I think they got the arrangement they wanted. Look, my head... What did my head want? My head wanted Vladimir Guerrero, right? That's the arrangement I wanted at the start of the offseason. And that's okay. That doesn't look like we're going to get him. My heart certainly wanted Pete. Love the storyline of Pete. Would love him to break the Mets home run record. Would love him to be a lifelong Met. It's great for the stories. Win a title or not, it's just you'd rather keep guys that you like, that are part of the culture, that know the culture here, than not. But my take is on trading for Mike Trout. And really, the reason I say that, it's bigger picture. You might be following the news rumblings. There's a salary cap coming to Major League Baseball. You better believe it. The majority of owners are going to push for it. I think the majority of fans are going to push for it after seeing what the Dodgers are doing this offseason. I think the Dodgers know something. I think the Dodgers know a cap is coming. So they're like, hey, let's get everybody now. This window could be short. Or that, we could get grandfathered in when there's a cap because we already have all these commitments. So my point with the Mets is don't stop. Right, this might be one of the only years from now on where there's no salary cap. Look, every other league has a salary cap, NFL, NBA, NHL. With no salary cap, go all in. Use your advantage. You're not as good as the Dodgers yet. I don't think you're as good as the Braves. And really, when you look at the Mets, the one weakness, not the one weakness, the biggest weakness is probably center field. You know, at catcher, you got to hope Alvarez takes a leap. The DH with Winker and Marte, we'll live with it. Second base, McNeil, maybe Acuna comes up. Maybe they still sign Iglesias. I don't know. You live with it. But, like, I think center field, and, you know, you got Siri and Taylor for defense. But go all out. Mike Trout, take a chance. You got to think the Angels are looking to unload him. He's the kind of guy that's huge contract. It may not take as much as you think to get him. The biggest question, obviously, two questions, right, is can he stay healthy and can he play a good center field? Both are very legitimate questions. He's already on the record saying that he'll play corner outfield, he'll play DH. That's not exactly what we need in this Mets configuration. So if he comes here, you kind of need him to play at least slightly above average center field. But you could always do late game defensive replacements. You could DH him some days. Mike Trout's a swing you got to take and do it now. You're not as good as the Dodgers. You're not as good as the Braves. I don't care for as much trading for Dylan Cease, you know, and giving up those prospects for a short-term rental. Go get Mike Trout. No one's talking about it. There's not a lot of teams that can afford him. I think he's ready to come to the East Coast. Go make it happen. Go win the World Series this year. Because, again, I don't, with the salary cap coming, you have this advantage of Steve Cohen that you may not have again. So, make it happen, Mets. All right. Thanks for listening, folks. Hope you enjoyed the take, Quake. It's good to be back. And again, look for this weekly. I want to keep it going and share it out. We're still growing it. So if anyone that you think might like some of these takes, share it to them. Have them give a follow, right? We're on Apple. We're on Spotify. Enjoy the Super Bowl. I'll talk to you next week.